Hey, Vikings fans, welcome back. It's another edition of the Wobcast, and we join you from Sports Authority Studios at Winter Park. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. Joining me behind the scenes is producer Mike Hiris, and we have a jam-packed show for you this week. Three really important topics relating to the Vikings. In the middle of the show, we're going to talk stadium. Jeff Anderson is going to join us. He's the Vikings Director of Corporate Communications. He's basically the right-hand man to Lester Bagley, who's the right-hand man to Mark and Ziggy Wilf. They're all trying to get us a new stadium. A lot of progress and momentum generated last week. Jeff is going to join us in the middle of Wobcast to tell us more about it. The last topic of the Wobcast is going to be the Bounty Gate. And we're not talking about the quilted quicker picker-upper. We're talking about bounty as in cheating in the NFL, having bounties out on players, perhaps trying to injure players intentionally. It was an ugly story that broke late last week. It has a Vikings twist to it, obviously, because the Vikings played the Saints in the 09 NFC title game. The Saints played a lot of other teams over the past three seasons when they had this bounty system in place. So we're going to talk a little bit about it at the end of the show. The first thing we're going to talk about, though, is a more relevant, or at least a more recent topic to the Vikings, and that is the franchise tag period, which expired on Monday. You all know about the franchise tag. Teams had until Monday to designate a player on their team with the franchise tag. The Vikings did it last year with Chad Greenway, you'll remember. Finally reached a long-term agreement with him in September. This time around, the Vikings didn't use it, but 21 other teams used the tag, which is, I gotta believe, a record. Typically, you see 10 or 11 teams, 12 teams use the tag. This year, 21. Now, a couple of the notable players who were tagged, quarterback Drew Brees from the Saints, running backs Ray Rice and Matt Forte from the Ravens and the Bears, wide receivers Dwayne Bowe and DeSean Jackson were both tagged, Wes Welker was tagged from the Patriots, so for the Vikings looking for some wide receivers, those guys off the market, cornerback Brent Grimes from the Atlanta Falcons, a guy that I really like, he was tagged, so he's not going to be available, a couple of safeties, one from Oakland named Tyvon Branch, Michael Griffin in Tennessee, they were tagged. All those guys off the market, but there were also some players that weren't tagged that are some high-profile players, and the Vikings might think about pursuing them in free agency. Look at wide receiver Vincent Jackson in San Diego. How about Brandon Lloyd in St. Louis, who had a slow start to his career but has really been resurgent in Denver and St. Louis? He's going to be a free agent. Cornerbacks Brandon Carr and Cortland Finnegan. Vikings fans, you're interested in those guys? I'm going to guess you are. A couple of safeties, Laron Landry, Thomas DeCloud from the Falcons, Landry from the Redskins. Those guys weren't tagged. Some thought they would be. A defensive tackle from Miami named Paul Soliai. He's a big, thick run stuffer that would play the Pat Williams type of position in the Vikings defense. He wasn't tagged. Long story longer, it was a frenzied franchise tag period with 21 teams using the tag to retain players, but that won't ruin what looks to be a talented and deep free agent pool. And if the Vikings choose to utilize free agency to add some talent, I think they're going to find a lot of good players out there, both high-profile players and mid-tier guys. Again, some of those high-profile players that you might be interested in, Vincent Jackson from San Diego, Brandon Carr, Cortland Finnegan. How about some offensive linemen, Ben Grubbs or Carl Nix? All those guys, free agents, mid-tier guys. Marquise Colston, Robert Meacham, Pierre Garçon, Reggie Wayne, Mario Manningham. All those guys, free agents. They're going to hit the free agent market on Tuesday, March 13th. That's next week. So circle that date on your calendar, folks. I'm not sure if the Vikings are going to be huge players in free agency. If they are, it's all going to start going down next week, Tuesday, March 13th. Of course, we're going to have a Wobcast for you, and we'll get more into free agency then. And now we switch gears a little bit from talking about franchise tags and franchise players and free agents to where those players are going to play if they're Minnesota Vikings. That's the subject of our next topic here on the Wobcast. To talk about that, we bring in Jeff Anderson, Vikings Director of Corporate Communications. What's up, dude?
Wobby, thanks for having me on.
No problem. Glad you're here. Jeff is, he wears a lot of hats, but one of the biggest hats he's wearing right now is he's the right-hand man to Lester Bagley, who is the lead on our stadium project. So that's a tall task, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's a fun task, but certainly, you know, get to spend a lot of time with Lester. So yes. I don't know whether that's good or bad.
But other guys too, like Mark Wilf. I mean, he's intimately involved. Ziggy gets involved, and I mean, you're going to the state capitol. You're with lawmakers and lobbyists. It's a highfalutin job for you. You know, just a kid from small town Iowa.
Yeah, kid from 850 people and down in Iowa. But no, it's fun. And honestly, you know, it's completely different than the football PR side of things. So I like the challenge.
Good. Which you started out with for, what, six seasons you were in the public relations department. You still do some of that.
Absolutely. Still work with Jared. Still work with Adrian. Still, you know, my main two guys. But more and more time on the stadium effort right now.
All right, so we're going to quiz you here on the stadium because I think for a lot of people, and I'll include myself, a lot of it just goes over your head. And last week on Thursday, we had a press conference at the state capitol, mm-hmm. and it was a huge deal. And unless you're living in a cave somewhere, you heard about it or you saw it on the news. Mm-hmm. So what happened last Thursday at the state capitol with the press conference?
Well, I think, last Thursday was, it was a significant first step. It was a culmination of a lot of hard work. You know, what you saw was an agreement by the team, by the city of Minneapolis, and by Governor Dayton and city and state leaders on, a proposal to build a new stadium at the current Metrodome site. So the deal is contingent on support of the state legislature and the Minneapolis City Council, but it's a big first step. It's something to get excited about. I think it's a lot of hard work from Senator Rosen, from Representative mm-hmm. Lanning, from Ted Mondale. The governor's really been the lead throughout this process and really done a great job of bringing everyone together. So it was an agreement that involved compromises from all parties, and I think it's a good deal. Now the real work begins at the Capitol.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We had the press conference on Thursday. At Thursday night, we didn't come back to Winter Park and pop champagne and celebrate.
Right.
There's
right.
still a process that this has to go through. Starting with what? What's the next step in this process? And then after the next step, what are the few steps after that?
Sure. Well, you're exactly right. I mean, it wasn't a big celebration. It was just the first step, and it was a very necessary step to get to an agreement with the city, with the state. Now let's push it forward. Now legislators have, they have some details to grab onto to say, okay, I support this or I don't support mm-hmm. this. And, that's what we've been missing for yeah. a while now. So it is a big first step, but I think now where you see the process go, legislators are working on a bill draft right now. We hope to have that by the end of the week, very beginning of next week. And we'll start the committee hearing process. Hopefully next week, we got to go through a few committees in both the Senate and the House. Mm-hmm. And then, hopefully you get to a final vote on the floor of the House and the Senate, and you get the governor to sign a bill. But, it's a long way from that happening. And we also need the Minneapolis City Council support okay. as well. So,
yep.
so there's some big hurdles to clear, but like I said, it's a big first step.
And that's the one I was going to go to right before you said it, the Minneapolis City Council. Mm-hmm. Why is that an important step?
Well, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing right now. The legislature wants to know that, look, if Minneapolis is going to get a new stadium, if they're going to get, in Mayor Ryback's plan, if they're going to get Target Center mm-hmm. refurbished, if they're going to, get some property tax relief and get to keep their convention center dollars, they need to show support for this deal. So the legislature wants to see some sign of support from the city council. Well, I think the city council maybe wants to see that the mm-hmm. legislature is going to push this through. So it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing
okay.
Right now. But, hopefully we'll see some, whether it's a letter or some sign of support from the Minneapolis City Council, so the legislature does know that they'll be on board when it's said
okay.
and done.
Jeff Anderson, our guest on the Wobcast today, he's the Director of Corporate Communications. Basically, his biggest job right now is working with Lester Bagley to get this stadium deal done. So let's bite into the stadium deal. Mm-hmm. This one that was proposed last week, $975 million project,
correct.
Right? And without getting into the deep, deep details,
right.
what's the percentage funding roughly for City of Minneapolis, state, but most importantly, the team?
Sure. Well, let's just take a step back for a second and talk about kind of three main themes in my okay. mind to this agreement. The first is that there's no general fund, no state general fund money, which was, high on all legislators' list of not to include any general fund money. It doesn't include that. There's also no new taxes required for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's diverting some existing taxes from the convention center. And the third is that the private contribution over the life of the deal is going to be over 50%
okay.
from the team and private sources. So if you take a look at how the numbers break down on a $975 million project, team's in for $427 million upfront. That's 44% of the cost. But then we're also going to put in $13 million a year over the life of the deal towards operating expenses and a capital improvement fund. So
okay.
when you combine those sources, that's where we come up with the over 50% of the entire project cost. The rest to round out the 975, the City of Minneapolis will be in for $150 million upfront. They'll also contribute to operating expenses and that capital improvement fund. And then the state of Minnesota will contribute $398 million upfront.
Mm-hmm.
And that's largely through electronic pull tabs.
Okay. So you're looking at the biggest contributor is the Vikings.
Correct.
And then it's the state and then the city.
Exactly.
Okay. And this is the third largest contribution by a team for a stadium in league history. Is that true?
That's exactly right. Third largest private slash team contribution behind Dallas and New York teams, you know, much larger markets, obviously. So like I was saying at the beginning, this really is a compromise from all parties. I mean, obviously the team had pursued Ramsey County and Arden Hills for a long time, and we were told that site wasn't going to work, that the only site that's going to get passed at the legislature is the Metrodome site. And so everybody has compromised. It's a significant contribution from the team, but it's also a significant contribution from the public. But I think that this deal, you know, everybody compromised, so that means it's a deal that works.
The proposed location right next to the current Metrodome site, Mall of America Field. So how is that going to work? Let's put the cart before the horse here, and let's say it passes, and it's a great time because that's great news. We got a new stadium. So cart before the horse. Construction and all that stuff starts as soon as possible, right?
Right.
And so how does that impact the 2012 season? And I'm thinking like season ticket holders.
Sure.
I'm thinking just fans who go to the game. What are they going to start seeing?
Well, I think, yeah, it's a great question. I think there's been a lot of uncertainty from season ticket owners about, okay, what, you know, what does this mean for the 2012 season?
Right.
Let's just talk about that for a second. And, and you know, we want to assure fans that we're going to be playing in Mall of America Field during 2012. But, you know, what the plan is to build right east of the current Metrodome. So right now the end zones run north and south.
Okay.
The plan is to shift the stadium so the end zones run east and west. We build right to the east, kind of on the large parking lot, and extend it to 11th Avenue. And what that hopefully will allow us to do is to continue play at the Metrodome for, you know, the next 3 years. And hopefully we're only playing at TCF for one season, maybe a season and a half, you know, worst case scenario, two seasons. But the idea is to limit our time at TCF, which is good for everybody. It's good for us. It's obviously good for the university and good for our fans.
Yeah. I mean, because there was a point in time where it was possible that the new site would be right in the middle of the current site, and that would be 3 to 4 seasons at TCF.
Exactly.
And we appreciate the university's help, especially a couple of years ago when we had to play there, and we'll appreciate their help if we do have to play there in the future. But it's not something that a franchise wants to do, whether it's the University of Minnesota or Seattle at the University of Washington or Chicago at the University of Illinois. It's just not a scenario you want to be in for 4 years.
Like you said, we appreciate the university, and it's a beautiful facility. Obviously, we're very proud of it in Minnesota, but it's not an NFL facility, and you know, I don't think they want us over there for 3 or 4 years. And like you said, it's a disruption to the business here, and it's a disruption to our fans as well. That, you know, and we also got to talk about competitive advantage for our football team for several years going outdoors. So yeah, as much as we can limit that time at TCF, it's, you know, that's in everybody's best interest. Yeah.
One of the most frequently asked questions that I get from fans regarding a new stadium, is it going to have a roof or no roof or a retractable roof? And I can't even really tell what fans would prefer. I mean, there's a large part of the population that wants an outdoor stadium,
right?
Just because it reminds them of old school Vikings football. But then there's also a lot of people, when you look at them, and they don't want to go to a game that's in the cold and outdoors. They like the domed environment. They like the loud noise at the Metrodome. So what do you think is the situation with the roof?
Well, right now the agreement calls for a fixed roof with the flexibility to go to a retractable roof if, you know, we can do it without raising any of the public costs, or, you know, if we can find cost savings elsewhere and get to a retractable roof. I think, you know, that's obviously, if you're going to build this facility, you know, in our mind, let's maximize it. So let's get as many events as we can there. Let's build it the best way possible if you're going to put this much money into it. So obviously retractable would be the best situation, but, you know, in an effort to cut down costs and to make sure we get this thing to work, we've gone with fixed roof at this point.
Okay.
So we'll, you know, to be determined on that.
If it's a fixed roof or if it's retractable, do you think that the NFL would award Minneapolis a Super Bowl?
I do. You know, I mean, they won't commit to it 100%, but as you've seen over the last several years, communities that do resolve their stadium issues, you know, get a Super Bowl in the near future. So I think we'd see a Super Bowl here soon in Minnesota.
I mean, you saw Indianapolis just hosted one, and you got to think partially as a reward for building Lucas Oil Stadium.
Absolutely.
A beautiful venue. They have the combine there every year that we go to. It's a great facility. Downtown Indianapolis is connected via Skyway, a lot like Minneapolis. I don't think it's far-fetched at all to think that Minneapolis would host a Super Bowl if they got this stadium built. You know,
Exactly. It's not just the Super Bowl. You'd be talking about NCAA Final Fours, maybe Big Ten Championships, Frozen Fours, you know, these major events that you're seeing in newer facilities around the country. There's no reason we shouldn't be having them here. Minneapolis is a great market. People want to be here. It's just a matter of having the facility that works. So not just Super Bowl. Obviously, that's a significant bump. You know, that's a great thing if we can get it here. Yeah. But it's all those other events that we can bring year after year after year.
All the stadiums that we've been to on the road with the team, no two stadiums are really alike, but they're all the new ones are really nice. So for someone who, a lot of people don't get to go to those stadiums. Mm-hmm. So explain to listeners of the Wobcast here what new stadiums bring for a team, the advantages for the team on the business side and the playing side, but also to the fans, advantages that the Metrodome doesn't have right now.
A new stadium doesn't just benefit the team's bottom line. I mean, obviously we need those revenues to be able to have long-term stability here. And there's no question we're at the bottom of the league in revenues. Yeah. We've always said that, and it's no secret. But also, you know, like we talked about just now, that, you know, you can bring in these other major events. So there are benefits to the state. There are benefits to the city. But it's also about our game day experience for our fans. I mean, right now, you know, love the Metrodome. It's served its purpose in the state, and it's been great. But it doesn't provide the experience that our fans expect or what they deserve. And so with a new stadium, you're going to see, you know, an open plaza that, you know, we can have pre-game events in a real, you know, nice area for fans to hang out. You're obviously going to see wider concourses, more restrooms, more concessions, better seating, you know, more room for seating, you know, just all these things that help make that game day experience much better. But you're also going to get a Hall of Fame, a team store, you know, a lot of those things that we see every other facility we go to. I mean, I remember going to Indianapolis and seeing live music in the concourses. Right. You know, they're wide enough that there's a band and people are just gathered around. Yeah. And you really make it a day-long experience as opposed to just get in, get your seat, watch the game, and get out.
Yeah. Speaking of day-long experience, Jeff Anderson, our guest on the Wobcast today, Director of Corporate Communications for the Vikings, trying to get us a stadium with Lester Bagley. An all-day event includes tailgating.
Mm-hmm.
For a while there, our preferred site was Arden Hills, and a big reason for that, or at least partially a reason, was the tailgate. There'd be a lot of room for parking and tailgating. So I think a lot of fans are immediately concerned that there won't be tailgating because the stadium is going to be put in downtown Minneapolis, but there still is going to be tailgating, right?
There will be tailgating. I mean, obviously not on the level of Arden Hills, and as we talked about before, it's all about compromises. And bottom line, we want to get this done in Minnesota, and we want it to work for the public, and we want it to work for the team. But there will still be tailgating. I mean, we have limited tailgating around the dome right now. That will continue to exist, and you know, hopefully you can provide some better opportunities for fans in those lots. But also, you know, the idea is to maybe ask the city to expand the tailgating zoning area so that there's more city blocks that could be used for tailgating on game days. So there will be tailgating. I mean, it obviously not on the level of Arden Hills, but you know, it's not just about the tailgating, just about the better game day experience overall as well.
Couple quickies to close here with Jeff Anderson on the Wobcast. Who have been, you might have already mentioned them earlier, but a couple of lawmakers or governors or people at the state capitol around St. Paul that have been big advocates and allies for you guys in trying to get this done. Who have been some of those people?
Well, obviously Governor Dayton has been out front on this issue from day one. He's you know, made no secret that he wants a new stadium. He wants to put people back to work right now. He wants to make sure that the team's in for 50% of the deal, which we are, you know, all these things to make sure it's done the right way. So he's been, you know, very vocal on his support for it. But really there's bipartisan support on this. You know, Senator Rosen, Representative Lanning, our bill authors have been great. I mean, Ted Mondale is out there now. You have Mayor Ryback, City Council President Barbara Johnson. All those people are starting to come together. You know, there's a working group of legislators that has been very involved throughout this process, and really now the business community and organized labor are jumping on too. Now that there's a deal, you know, there's details, there's an agreement in place, you know, you're going to see those people become more vocal on the issue.
So this is really, is it fair to say this is as far as we've gotten?
I think so. I think so. Yeah. I mean, because you have a deal that the state, you know, that the governor is really behind. You have a deal that our bill authors are supportive of, that there's a bipartisan group of legislators, the business community supports, organized labor supports, our fans on board.
you already went through the timeline, but what's immediately next? What can we expect in terms of a timeline? Is there, are there going to be hearings soon, or is that going to be in the next week?
Yeah, I mean, our hope is that the bill is drafted, you know, by the end of this week or first couple days of next week, and that we're into hearings, you know, middle of next week.
All right, that's cool. Stadium Talk from Jeff Anderson. Where can fans go to keep learning more about this?
Well, keep going to Vikings.com, and that's something we have to stress, is that our fans, you know, without their support, we don't get this done, and they've been very vocal throughout this process. Now that there's an agreement and something for them to latch onto, I think they'll be even more vocal, and we really can't do it without them. So keep going to Vikings.com, go to our stadium page. We have all the latest on the stadium, and sign up to make sure you can stay involved in the effort.
And there's a rendering too of what the stadium might look like. I mean, maybe it's not exactly what it'll look like, but it's kind of cool and gets you excited to think about.
Absolutely. You see the site plan and you start to get a vision of what this thing could be like down the road.
All right, Jeff. Thanks, man.
Thanks a lot, Wobby. Appreciate it.
There's your stadium update, fans, and we'll get into our last topic of the day on this week's Wobcast. Let's clean up the New Orleans situation with a little bit of bounty talk. It was a huge story that broke late last week, and I'm going to try and give you the quick version here. Basically, the NFL investigated the New Orleans Saints, and some 50,000 pages of documents that they've compiled, they found that the New Orleans Saints had engaged in a bounty system under defensive coordinator Greg Williams. He's kind of the main culprit in all of this. And basically what you're looking at is Greg Williams / New Orleans Saints players putting up rewards for instances where opposing players were carted off the field or sustained some sort of injury or were knocked out of the game. And that's what the NFL has found the Saints guilty of. Obviously, it's a huge story. And one of the important distinctions to make right off the bat, there's a few of them, but the one we're going to start with is the difference between incentives and bounties. And a lot of times, it's even in players' contracts, but a lot of times, even in meeting rooms or in the locker room, players will engage in incentives for sacks or for interceptions or for touchdown receptions. They'll reward incentives for accomplishing those tasks. That's a far different scenario than a bounty, where you're actually promoting and encouraging knocking players out of the games or giving a $1,500 award for making a player have to leave the field on a cart. I mean, those are the sort of things that were uncovered in this NFL investigation. And it's kind of a touchy topic for an employee of a team, for a website of another team to touch on, which we're doing right now, because especially losing in the NFC title game as we did to the Saints when this was going on. This has been going on for 3 years. Since 2009, it's involved 27 players. Because we don't want to sit here and root for punishment and root for bad things to happen to another club. At the same time, this is something that sheds a dark cloud over the NFL, and it gives the Saints organization a black eye, and it just should not be tolerated because it lacks integrity, it lacks sportsmanship. And I was talking about this with Radio Voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, on his show, and while he and I were discussing it, Chad Greenway called in and weighed in and said that he was getting a little upset that this was portrayed as something that happens a lot, that all NFL teams do this, or that this happens in a lot of locker rooms. Yeah, the incentive part does, where you're awarding players for a sack or for an interception, but the bounty part, in my opinion, does not happen. I don't think it happens in the Vikings locker room, and I've been around here for 7 seasons. I've never seen it where you're rewarding players for knocking guys out of the game. I just think most players have more respect for each other than that. The second distinction to remember here is, even if you consider yourself an old school football guy and you think football is a violent game and it's never going to be clean and injuries are just a part of it, and you forgive the Saints for doing this and you do whatever it takes to win, even if somehow you can get past the fact that the Saints engage in a bounty system, you still can't get past the fact that the fact of the matter is the NFL investigated the Saints. They told them to stop doing this. And Saints GM Mickey Loomis was instructed to get it under control and to stop it. He said he would do it, and then the Saints continued doing it even after they were stopped. It's almost a situation where the cover-up is worse than the crime. I think the crime is bad enough, but then to cover it up and to lie about it repeatedly, I think that's really what's going to get the Saints in trouble. And people have speculated about suspensions. They speculated about taking draft picks away. They speculated about fining. I don't want to advocate or promote any of that. Because they all work for other teams. I don't know all the facts. There's two sides to every story. But the bottom line is this is a huge moment in NFL history. It's got to be one of the darkest scandals in league history, where you have players intentionally trying to knock other players out of the game and then getting awarded for it via monetary payments. It's a big spot for Commissioner Roger Goodell in the NFL. They're going to levy some sort of sanctions on the Saints and the individuals responsible. I'm not going to sit here and promote what they should or shouldn't be. I'm just going to sit back and let it happen. But obviously, it's something that Vikings fans pay special attention to because of what happened in the 2009 NFC title game, where they were battering Brett Favre consistently. And then even in the following season when the Vikings and Saints played in 2010, I don't know if things were going on in that game as well. But something that we'll watch closely. It's going to be a story that just dominates the NFL news, at least for this week. The NFL has said that its punishment will come down by the end of March when the NFL has its annual owners meetings down in Florida. So just a little bit something to watch. It's a negative story, and I wish it wasn't happening, but the fact of the matter, it is happening, so we had to talk about it. That's my take on it, and that is it for us today. I'm Mike Wobshaw. Thanks again for listening. We're going to leave you with a classic from the Foundations. Take it away.